Chapter 19. Confession. Restoration. The Gal Vorbach. The Blessed Lady knew who it was before the door opened. She sat comfortably on the edge of her bed, hands folded in her lap, clad in her layered priestess's robe of cream and grey. Her sightless eyes turned to him as he entered, following the sounds of his bare feet. She heard the swish of robes, rather than the thrum of active armour, and the novelty brought a smile to her lips. "Hello, Captain," she said.
"Confessor," he replied.
It took considerable poise to hide her shock. His voice had changed from the months of privation, sounding drier as it left his throat. And there was something else, something more, a new resonance, despite the current weakness. She'd heard the rumours, of course. If the talk was true, they'd resorted to killing one another and drinking their brother's blood.
"I thought you'd have come to me before now."
"Forgive the delay. I have been with the Primarch since my return."
"You sound tired."
"The weakness will fade."
Argyltal sat on the floor by her bed, taking his customary position. He'd last sat there only 3 nights before, though for the word-bearer almost a year had passed.
"I missed you," he told her, "but I am glad you were not with us."
Cyrene wasn't sure how to begin.
"I heard things," she said.
Argyltal smiled.
"They are likely all true."
"The human crew?"
"Dead, to a man. That is why I am glad you were not on board with us."
"And you suffered, as the rumours say?"
The word-bearer chuckled.
"That depends what the rumours say."
His casual stoicism charmed her, as it always did. The hint of another smile tickled the corners of her lips.
"Come here. Kneel and let me see you."
He complied, bringing his face before her and holding her wrists in a gentle grip as he led her hands. She brushed her fingertips along his skin, tracing the contours of his diminished features.
"I have always wondered if you were handsome. It is so hard to tell with only touch to rely on."
The thought hadn't really crossed his mind before. He was bred above such matters. He told her so now with an amused addendum.
"Whether I was or not, I have looked better than I do now."
Cyrene lowered her hands.
"You are very gaunt," she noted,
"and your skin is too warm."
"Sustenance was in short supply. As I said, the rumours were true."
When silence reached out between them, she found it awkward and unsettling. Never before had they struggled for words to share. Cyrene toyed with a lock of her hair, which her maid had painstakingly arranged only half an hour ago.
"I have come for confession," he said, breaking the silence at last.
Rather than soothe her, it sent her heart racing faster. She wasn't certain she wished to know what depredations had occurred on the Orfeo's Lament. But Cyrene, above all else, was loyal to her legion. Hers was a cherished role, and she was honoured to perform it.
"Speak, warrior."
A friendly formality came over her voice.
"Confess your sins."
She expected him to relate how he'd butchered his brothers and supped their blood to survive. She expected tales of horror from the warp storm, a storm she'd never seen herself, and had only the poorly worded descriptions of other crew members to rely on. The captain spoke slowly, clearly.
"I have spent decades of my life waging war in the name of a lie. I have rendered worlds compliant to a false society. I need forgiveness. My legion needs forgiveness."
"I don't understand."
He began to describe the last year of his life for Cyrene, just as he had for his father. She interrupted a great deal less often, and once the retelling was complete, she focused not on the greater ramifications, but the moment that she'd heard Argyltal's voice wavering more than any other.
"You killed Vendata," she said,
keeping her voice soft to rob the accusation of its bite.
"You killed your friend."
Argyltal looked into her blind eyes. Since returning from the storm's depths, looking at living beings had a strangely pleasant edge. He'd always been able to hear the liquid rhythm of her heart, but now the sound was accompanied by the teasing sense of her blood running through her veins. All that warmth, all that taste, all that life. Scarcely beneath her fragile skin. Looking at her, knowing how easy it would be to kill her, was a guilty pleasure he'd never felt before. And it was so easy to imagine. Her heart would slow, her eyes would glaze, her breath would shiver as her lips trembled, then her soul would fall into the warp, screaming in that tumultuous abyss, to shriek into those thrashing tides until it was devoured by the Neverborn. Argyltar looked away.
Forgive me a moment's distraction, Confessor. What did you just say?
I said you killed your friend.
Cyrene touched a hand to her plain silver earring. A gift from her lover, Argyltar suspected, Major Arik Jesmantine. The word-bearer didn't reply right away.
I did not come to be forgiven for that.
I am not sure you can be.
The captain rose to his feet once more.
It was a mistake to come here so soon. I had feared this hesitance between us.
Feared? Cyrene smiled up at him. I've never heard you use that word before, Argyltar. I thought the Astartes knew no fear.
Very well. It is not fear. Those words spoken by any other might sound petulant and defensive, but she heard no such emotion in Argyltar's voice. I've seen more than most Imperial souls will ever see. Perhaps I possess a greater understanding of mortality. After all, I have seen where our souls go when we die.
Would you still give your life for the Imperium?
This time there was no hesitation in his answer.
I would give my life for humanity. I would never offer my life to preserve the Imperium. Day by day we have sailed farther from my grandfather's empire of lies. There will be a reckoning for the deceptions he has draped over the eyes of an entire species.
It's good to hear you speak this way, she said.
Why? You delight in hearing me speak blasphemy against the Emperor's dominion?
No, far from it. But you sound so certain of everything once more. I'm glad you made it back from that place.
Cyrene offered her hand, the way a covenant priestess would offer her signet ring to be kissed. It was an old ritual between them, with no signet ring to kiss. Argyltar's cracked warm lips met the skin of her knuckles for the briefest moment.
War will come from this, she said. Won't it?
The Primarch copes it will not. Humanity has only one choice, and it must be made by those who have sought out the answers.
Such as yourself?
He chuckled again.
No, by my father and the brothers he can trust. Some will be brought to his side by deception if they are too dull-minded to come in perfect faith. But we are a populous legion, and our conquests are many, with many more to come. Much of the Imperium's border worlds will answer to the warriors of Aurelion first, and the Emperor second.
You're planning this already?
It may not come to war, he said. The Primarch is venturing into the Great Eye to witness his own revelations. Evidently, the lives of the serrated sun were spent and warped in what was merely truth's prelude.
Cyrene could hear the discomfort in his voice. He was making no move to hide it.
Do you believe the Primarch sent you in first out of fear?
Argyltar didn't answer that.
Tell me one more thing before you leave, Captain.
Ask.
Why did you believe all of this? Hell worlds, souls, humanity's slow extinction, and these monsters that call themselves demons. What convinced you that it was more than some alien trick?
Such creatures are no different from the gods of countless faiths that have risen and fallen over the millennia. Few gods were benevolent creators to any culture.
But what if we're being lied to?
It would have been easy to say that the faith was its own sustenance, and that humanity always reached for religion, that almost every rediscovered human culture clung to their own belief in the infinite and the divine, and that here was a realm of prophecy, where beings with the power of gods had proved beyond doubt that they'd summoned the Lord of the 17th Legion, shaping fate to make these events unfold. Whether they were benevolent creator gods from mythology, or mere manifestations of mortal emotion, was irrelevant. Here was the divine force in the galaxy of lost souls. On the edge of the physical universe, gods and mortals had finally met, and mankind would fall without their masters. But Argeltal said none of this. He was weary of such explanation.
I remember your words after Monarchia died in the Emperor's fire. You told me it was the day you truly began to believe that gods were real once you'd seen such power unleashed. I felt the same when I saw the power at work in this storm. Can you understand that, Sirene?
I understand.
I thought you would. And with those words spoken, he walked from her room.
Aquilon found him in the practice cages. Both warriors were aware of each other long before either said a word. Aquilon watched in silence, respectfully waiting until Argeltal finished his round of exercises, while the word-bearer graced the custodian with a perfunctory nod, saying nothing as he worked through his sword-work routines. Finding balance in his weakened physique was a tortuous affair. The deactivated sparring blades cut the air in dull sweeps, a poor shadow of the lost swords of red iron, and he was breathless with exertion as his heart thudded to keep up with the demands he placed upon his emaciated physique. At last, Argeltal lowered the blades. His muscles ached from only 2 hours of training. Before his journey into the Eye, such a poor performance would see him doing penance for a ritual 99 nights.
Aquilon, he greeted his friend.
You look as though you died and forgot to lie down.
The word-bearer snorted. I feel like it.
A shame. You'd managed to last almost 4 minutes against me last time we stepped into these cages together.
I see you're not in a merciful mood.
In better times, this banter would have come easily to Argeltal.
Did you come to speak of Ven?
Aquilon opened the force cage and took up a practice blade twin to the one Argeltal still held. The sparring cage's hemispheres closed around them both. Both warriors wore robes, one the white of Terra's palace servants, one the grey of the 17th Legion.
I wanted to hear it from you.
He raised the blade in a two-handed grip, mimicking his favoured weapon. His warriors carried the traditional glaives, but Aquilon's antique Biddenhander broadsword was a blade apart. He carried this blade as he wielded his own sword, with a confident, effortless grip. Argeltal raised his own swords in a defensive cross, feeling the burn of lactic acid in his muscles. The two warriors tended to play to their strengths in the past. Aquilon was ferociously offensive in his blade work. Argeltal remained consummately defensive.
So, will you tell me what happened?
Aquilon was indeed not in a merciful mood. Before the word-bearer could even answer, Argeltal's blades were knocked from his hands, and the captain found himself on the floor, breathing against the custodian's sword point. It scratched the dirty skin of his throat, and Aquilon shook his head.
Pathetic.
He offered his hand to help Argeltal rise.
Try again.
The word-bearer rose without the offered hand, retrieving his blades.
I do not like the pity in your voice.
Then do something to get rid of it, but at least answer my question.
The next clash lasted several seconds, but ended the same way. The word-bearer backhanded Aquilon's sword away from his neck.
Have you read the reports?
He asked the custodian, again refusing his friend's offered hand and rising unaided.
Yes, they are vague, and I am being generous when I say even that.
Argeltal had read them as well. The surface of Cadia, the journey into the Eye. The reports of each event were loose and evasive fictions that almost moved him to laughter.
They are vague, he conceded, raising his blades again. But they are accurate. I will enlighten you where I can.
This time Argeltal attacked. Aquilon disarmed him in 2 swings of his blade, and a boot to the solar plexus sent the word-bearer back down to the floor.
Begin with Vendata. He told me that Lorga was attending a heathen ritual, and several of the officers would be with him.
That's true enough.
You are still blocking the fainted thrust, by the way.
I know.
Good. Now speak.
Something burned in his blood, something reactive, unwilling to be dominated. Argeltal bit back a sudden need to curse at the custodian in a language that was and was not Colchisian.
It was not a ritual in the sense that we feared it would be.
He rose to his feet as he continued.
A tedious recital of ancient texts, prayers to spirits of ancestors, dances,
drums and herbal narcotics. Blades in hands, Argyltal attacked again. Another clash, 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 and he was dumped back onto the floor, the back of his head perilously close to the buzzing bars of the force cage.
Lorgar sent you into the storm based on this. A theatrical performance of old lies.
This time, Aquilon didn't offer to help Argyltal stand. A doubting scowl passed over his features.
Don't be foolish.
The word-bearer rolled his shoulders, wincing at the crackle of abused muscle and vertebrae.
He never sent us into the storm. I volunteered. We lacked standard Mechanicum Explorator vessels, so we used the smallest warship in the fleet.
The two warriors circled one another, blades half a meter apart.
You volunteered?
It was a last attempt to salvage some worth from the journey. One last venture beyond Imperial borders before we turn around and make for new space.
Aquilon, there is nothing out there. Do you think we wish to heap further shame upon ourselves by admitting that?
Plenty of expeditionary fleets take months, even years, to find a world worthy of conquest. But this is our Primarch's fleet, even if only temporarily.
Desperation drove us to try one last time.
Don't hate us for doing our sworn duty. The custodian attacked, his blade lashing one of Argyltal's blades out of the captain's grip, while a kick smashed the other aside. The word-bearer smiled through a face streaked with sweat and went to recover his blades yet again.
And Vendata? Aquilon asked.
Argyltal's smile faded, wiped from his face.
Ven died with my brothers. Deumos fell first, then Rykus and Zarquoral. Ven was last.
The word-bearer met the custodian's eyes, letting his sincerity show.
He was my friend, Aquilon. I mourn him as you do.
And this riot on the planet that killed three Astartes and a Custodes.
When the Primarch renounced the barbarians and refused to draw them into the Imperium, they rose up in anger. What could we do? Their rituals are too far from the Imperial truth. Never will they accept the Emperor's rule. Invasion?
The planet is sparsely populated, and much of it is a paradise despite its proximity to the hellish storm.
Cyclonic torpedoes will annihilate the tribes and leave the planet free for future colonization, if the Emperor wills it.
Aquilon released a pent-up breath. There was something unarguably youthful about the warrior, despite his ageless, regenerative immortality.
I commend Lorgar's actions in rejecting the primitives on the world below. I have seen compliance after compliance executed to perfection for 3 years, and I do not judge his actions as flawed now.
It's difficult to believe Ven is dead, that's all. He'd earned 27 names in the Emperor's service over a century of immaculate duty. The same mentor taught us both to wield a blade. Amon will grieve to learn of his fate.
He died in the Emperor's service, defending a Primarch from the rebellion of heathen culture. You may not respect my sire, but he is still a son of the Emperor. If I could choose my hour of death, it would be in battle at Lorgar's side.
Aquilon raised his sword on guard, speaking with a curious formality.
Thank you for your candor, Argyltal. Our presence is loathed by your legion, but the custodes have always appreciated your friendship.
The word-bearer didn't answer. His next attack was deflected and beaten back within a matter of moments. Aquilon offered a hand again, and this time Argyltal took it as he rose.
What now for the serrated sun?
Asked the custodian.
There's nothing left for us out here. Once Cadia is purged, we press on as part of the 1301st, returning to more promising territory. I believe the Primarch will rejoin the main Crusade fleet with Erebus and Corpheron. He will be done with these provincial conquests. I suspect he also wishes to speak with several of his brothers.
Aquilon nodded and returned his practice sword to the weapon rack. His white robe was unmarked, while Argyltal's was bathed in sweat stains down the spine and around the collar. The custodian saluted, making the sign of the Aquila over his chest. Argyltal returned it, as he always did in his friend's presence.
One last thing, the custodian remarked.
The word-bearer raised an eyebrow.
Speak.
Congratulations, Chapter Master.
Argyltal couldn't resist a smile.
I wasn't aware it was public knowledge. Will you be at the ceremony?
Without a doubt.
In a moment of rare fellowship, Aquilon rested his hand on Argyltal's shoulder.
I wish you well on your return to health. I am glad that at the end, Vendata stood with a friend.
An image of Ven's last moments flashed through Agaltal's mind. The naked custodian twitching, gagging, being dragged down and impaled upon the wooden spear. Unable to speak another lie, the word-bearer merely nodded. The ceremony was attended by every officer of significant rank, as well as the remaining word-bearers of the Serrated Sun, including the robed ranks of their acolyte auxiliary, many of whom would be elevated into the three shattered companies with the Legion's losses in recent months. Such a gathering required use of De Profundis's primary hangar deck, which in turn offered a stunning, disquieting backdrop through the open bay door's shimmering force field. Through the haze of thin energies, the storm beyond was a swirling mess of psychic vitriol. The ship creaked and whined around them as they stood in orderly rows, facing Lorgar. At the Primarch's side, the Blessed Lady carried a rolled scroll on a plain white cushion. She stared blindly over the ranks of word-bearers, occasionally glancing to the towering Primarch as if she could somehow see him. On Lorgar's left, Fleet Master Balok Torvus stood tall and proud in his ceremonial grey and white uniform, a fur cloak, once the skin of some immense Arctic beast that the officer had never even seen, let alone killed himself, draped over one side of his body. None present could actually recall the last time Torvus had set foot on a planet. The man clearly treasured his place among the stars. Fully a third of the Legion warriors were wasted husks in their half-repaired armour. These were the survivors of the Eye, standing in rows ahead of their 100 remaining brethren. The Mechanicum contingent had manifested in full strength as well, though only one of their robotic charges was present. To no one's surprise, Incarnadine was among the word-bearers' ranks, the scarlet war machine bedecked in honour scrolls and towering above its living kinsmen. Despite bearing the scarlet armour of Carthage, it was a welcome presence among the Legion's grey. Standing aside from all the others, four golden figures watched from a gantry above. Aquilon and his custodians were resplendent in their armoured finery, the gold surfaces playing host to flickering reflections from the storm outside. The Primarch, clad in a shirt of fine silver mail, raised his hands for silence. All whispers died down immediately. I have brought this expeditionary fleet far from the heart of my father's kingdom. Every fleet with a word-bearer presence has done the same, sailing far from beloved Terra into the cold, away from the cradle of our species. We are far from our brothers, and will hear tell of their travels and conquests in time. But I say this with confidence. None of my legion has endured what you have. None have stared into the madness at the edge of the universe as you have done. And you survived. You returned. Lorgar inclined his head at his warriors before continuing. This legion, more than any other, has suffered through change and evolution since its inception. But each phase exalts us, improves us, and brings us closer to fulfilling our potential. The Emperor bred this legion from his biological barracks on distant Terra, and for many years only Terrans filled its ranks. A more innocent age, an age when the legion bore a different name. And today, we begin to leave the last vestiges of those days behind. The Imperial Heralds became the word-bearers, and the word-bearers were shown the error of their ways in worshipping the Emperor. Change upon change, all leading towards this moment. The Primarch gestured a gloved hand to a bulkhead in the closest wall and spoke a single word. Enter! The bulkhead opened to reveal two figures, both armoured in crimson ceramite, walking towards the Primarch. The first bore a black helm with eye lenses of crystal blue. One eye was ringed by the golden serrated sun, and his power armour was edged in polished silver. The second carried a familiar crozius of black iron, with its armour trimmings formed of bronze and bone. Thick ornamental chains rattled around their waists and wrists as both warriors moved. Prayer scrolls were bound to shin guards and pauldrons, the parchment showing the Primarch's own flowing script. Warriors of the Serrated Sun, Lorgar smiled, kneel before your new commanders. Every word-bearer went to their knees. Incarnadine took several seconds longer to complete its obeisance, lowering itself on grinding hydraulics. The first Crimson Warrior removed his helm. Argaltar looked upon the gathered legion and called out across the deck,
"Survivors of the Orpheo's Lament, rise and step forward."
They did as they were ordered. Behind Argaltar, Zaphon removed his own skulled helm, remaining by the Primarch's side. The new chapter master was still gaunt, as were the warriors he surveyed with a calm gaze.
"Our sire has ordered we rebuild the serrated sun far beyond its former strength. We obey his word, as we have always obeyed, but he has offered us more. You, the survivors of the Orpheo's Lament, are to be honored for your sacrifices."
Argaltar nodded to Zaphon, who took the scroll from Cyrene's cushion and brought it to the chapter master.
"This scroll is bare but for two names, my own and Chaplain Zaphon's. If you accept the honor of joining us as the Primarch's chosen elite, then you will kneel before the Blessed Lady in this very hangar, and you will speak your name to her. It will be written upon this parchment and stored in the vaults aboard De Profundis."
Argaltar looked each of the survivors in the eyes, one after the other.
"We will be the Gal Vorbak, armored in black and crimson, the elite of the Serrated Sun, and the chosen of Lorgar Aurelian."
Lorgar chuckled, light and pleasant, as he stepped forward to rest a hand on Argaltar's shoulder guard. On the gantry above, Calhin let his glance flicker to Aquilon. His voice was low, despite the fact he wore his helm, and none would overhear them speaking over the inter-squad vox.
"Gal Vorbak, I did not study their culture as you did. Is that Colchisian?"
Aquilon nodded.
"It means blessed sons."
"I am pleased for Argaltar. He is healing well, and it will be good to turn back into fairer territory after this failed madness. Dumas was always cancerous, so I will shed no tears at his tenure coming to an end."
That statement met with grunts of agreement from the others.
"When Lorgar returns to the 47th Expedition, should we accompany him?"
Aquilon had been dwelling on that very thought.
"Our mandate is to stand vigil over the Legion itself. Four custodian teams bound to our four fleets. Iacchus already claims the 47th, and I trust him as I trust any one of you. Let him play watchdog over this weakling Primarch for a while. Our duties will keep us with the 1301st and the compliances to come."
Calhin released a slow breath.
"I would pay dearly to set eyes on Terra skylines once more."
"You will,"
said Aquilon.
"In 47 years, the other custodian scoffed. "Remember the terms of our oath. 5 decades among the stars, 50 long, tedious years away from Terra."
"It beats the endless blood games,"
Nerilus shrugged.
"You always say that," Calhin pointed out, "because you are so awful at them."
Aquilon heard the tension in his brothers' voices.
"The word-bearers will not languish under suspicion forever. In 3 years, have you seen evidence that they still worship the Emperor? And look at them now. Already their rites are growing closer to the traditions of the other legions. This is almost like Sigismund knighting one of his Templars at a gathering of the Imperial Fists."
Calhin shrugged.
"Perhaps they have come a long way from the fanatics we joined, but the stink of desperation yet clings to their breath when they shout their battle cries. I still do not trust them."
The Oculi Imperator didn't take his eyes from the red-clad figure speaking with his new warriors as they knelt before the blind girl from the dead world.
"No," he said. "Neither do I."
"Not even Argaltar?"
"One warrior in an entire legion."
Aquilon left the railing, turning back to his custodians.
"He is the only one I trust. That's the problem."